Welcome to Catching Alphas, the podcast for everything fishing. We are brought to you by ctfishguides.com, Connecticut's premier guide service. We are also brought to you today by farmingtonflies.com, your online fly shop specializing in custom flies that are guide tested and fish approved. Follow us on Instagram at @farmington_flies, @ctfishguides, and @catchingalphas_podcast. We are on Facebook and Twitter as CT Fish Guides. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel, CT Fish Guides, for fly tying tutorials, knot tying, and fishing tips. So moving on, we have Joe Goodspeed with Diamondback Rods on tonight. So Joe's one of the best large alpha trout hunters that I've met. The first time I met him, I could tell that his level of passion and commitment is as high as it gets in this sport. He's also a well-rounded angler, not just trout, not just with a fly rod. Which I have a lot of respect for that. So Joe designed the Contact and Contact 2 fly rods for TNT, which I know we're all very familiar with. He also had some involvement with developing the ESOC series and the big game rods for offshore fly. I could spend more time talking about his resume, but we just kind of want to get him on here. And he might be able to give you an idea kind of where he's been and what he's done. So I'm going to see if Joe's on here real quick. So anyway, sorry for the delay there. How you doing?
Hey guys. Hey Derek.
Hey man.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you sound, yep, we can hear you good.
What? Can I just go and grab a drink quick? I was talking to my girlfriend at dinner and I missed out on the start of this, but
yeah.
I want to make sure I'm not like dry, you know, as I'm talking.
Yeah, do it up. We're laid back, man. Go for it. Got a drink, ready to go?
Ready to go.
All right, man. Joe, just give us a quick rundown kind of how long you've been working in the industry, maybe who you've worked for and what you've done a little bit, just quickly. So folks know.
I've been working in the industry more than a decade. I first worked for Cortland Line when I got out of college, and I did two different stints at Cortland Line, one short one and then one longer one, where I ended up doing line design and some rudimentary rod design there, where I wasn't really firsthand designing anything, and but mostly line. And then I worked at TNT for about 6 years. They're doing lots of things, but mostly, you know, product related stuff and design. And after I left TNT last March, I've worked at Diamondback Rods now for about a year, since last June. Mm-hmm. So it's been a pretty dynamic year there with what I've done here.
Right on. So your initial release of Diamondback rods include, and correct me if I'm wrong, the 10-foot one weight, the 10-foot two weight, the 10-10 two weight, and the 10-10 three weight, correct?
Yeah, you know, there's a 10-foot 10 four weight that was just behind those rods that I just made one more change to the blank as the other ones were done. And that's why that rod, did not release with the, with those, but there's also a 10 foot three weight and a 10 foot 10 inch six weight that are both blanks that I have here at my house right now that I am probably going to make adjustments to both of them, but those are both going to be in the mix of rods by the end of summer.
Mm, and I think I remember either you or Tori Collins saying that you were pretty excited about the four weight. Is that accurate? The four weight.
Four weights are my babies. I fish with four weights is more than anything probably, and so with everything that I've designed, I've always spent a lot of time on the four weights, the TNT four weights, the contact one and two four weights, this four weight. They're all something that is I want it to be right for what I do, so that takes more time.
So just to give people that may not be as familiar with you as I am in your style. So I know like you fish a lot of trout waters that are not high volume, right? There's you're definitely what I would call a big fish hunter. And I'm that might be wrong, but like do you prefer to catch, I know we're getting away from rod building for a second, but do you prefer to catch large fish or like as many fish as you can catch?
I do a lot of different things, you know. I do like to catch, you know, fish for big stuff, but for me, fishing for muskies, you know, is that sort of challenge where it's like you're fishing for the biggest stuff. And so with, you know, with the trout fishing, I used to live in central, you know, New York, you know, which had was a good jump off point for places that were really low gradient, you know, marginal water stuff. And where I am now in southern Vermont is the waters are not like that. And so I make driving trips to waters like that. But with it being, you know, 3, 4 hours away from where I am, the type of waters that would be like that, it's not as much of what I'm doing now. And seasonally, I do so many different things. I fish for things like false albacore in the fall from shore a lot, and muskie in the late season. I ice fish in the winter time. So, you know, I consider myself more of a seasonal angler than like a trophy trout angler now, even though I've done a lot of that.
Yeah, I mentioned that when bringing you on that you do a lot more than just even with a fly rod ice fishing. I know I do a ton of ice fishing too. So anyway, to get back to the rods. So with the rods that are available now, the 10 foot one weight, the 10 foot two weight, the 10 10 two weight, and the 10 10 three weight, can you just walk us through maybe with each model? Like maybe what was your specific goal or what are their strengths? And I have a follow-up question to that, but what were you like with the 10 foot one weight? What was even the 10 foot two, like what were you front?
I consider two weight to be the class of rods these days that are really made to be best with like bead flies or multiple bead fly rigs. And the three weight, I think, is now a rod where guys are going to need to be able to set the hook with a larger size hook, be able to set the hook on bigger, heavier, you know, bony mouthed fish. So I intentionally made this three a three that would be strong enough to handle good size jig streamers and have the tip and tip mid power to set the hook on those fish, and then made the twos rods that would have the backbone to fight nice river fish, but we're going to have more of the tip and rod action power to fish beach flies, not, you know, big, you know, anchors like a jig streamer or a big bug, you know. And then the one weight, you know, all of the rods, the one weight included, I wanted to still be able to fight the fish. You know, guys are wanting to fish smaller and smaller flies, but it's, you know, if it's not fun if you can't, you know, land your, you know, a lot of the fish effectively, even if you can hook them with the really light equipment. So you know, even your one can only be so light if you still have the backbone to effectively make it a fishing tool for the stuff we want to do with it. And for me, all of these rods is a bit of a departure from following the line weight standard, because there's gaps in what we would want to do with nymphing equipment between these sizes of what would actually load with 120 grain at 30 feet, 4 weight fly line, or 100 at 30 feet, 3 weight fly line. It's such an arbitrary amount of power to use as a size reference for a rod when the things that you're doing with it are a world apart.
Right.
A lot of times, even the dry dropper fishing, we're using such lighter lines that it's not applicable how that, 3 weight rod is going to load with the 3 weight line. So, having the backbone to be fish fighting tools, having the tip power to do different application things is the way that I'm approaching sizing and designing the nymph rods now. And I think that there's room for something lighter than the one that I've designed now. But I think there's room for all of those rods because, as things get lighter and things get more fine and technical, there's going to be, that need for equipment like that that can still fight the fish. And so, to have, the way that we're doing it now, I know everyone kind of has their own interpretation of what size and what power a certain weight nymph rod is, but I think that there could be a more accurate way of sizing and describing what the size and power is so that you could more effectively work within the margins of between 1 weight, 2 weight, and 3 weight for, the rods that fit the applications of what we're really doing.
So, like, could you see only a grating rod versus like in sections of threes? That sounds kind of crazy, but like, you kind of said like the style of like grain weights with fly rods and stuff like that, and throwing that kind of out the window. I would imagine like, the 1 weights and 2 weights where you have stronger backbone kind of to land fish, but a soft tip. Does recovery become difficult at that point because you're having like a maybe you're setting a stronger backbone in the butt section of the rod and a real soft tip? Like I've seen some rods that had really good backbone, and I'm talking like 8 years ago when we first had Euro nymphing rods coming out, and the recovery was not all that well. So is there a challenge as far as like that's concerned, really? Is it just like a material thing?
There's always a challenge of having a smooth progression of power, and ending up with the amount of power that you need to do what you want to do without sapping the, sensitivity and light feeling of a rod, which is really important, for a nymph rod to be a high performance nymph rod. You can't go overboard on the wall thickness anywhere in the rod because, it's just the That's the difference of what you feel when you feel a rod that's designed well, that's not so fragile that it's gonna, break all the time on you, is really riding that fine balance between, as much wall thickness as you need, where you need it to be strong without having any more than you need anywhere. Because the and rods that have more material than you need are the rods that right away don't feel, lively and responsive and sensitive in your hand.
Right on.
And I want to, I went off topic there a little bit as I was talking, as you kind of asked, how would you go about differentiating the sizes if it wasn't for the line weight? The way that I would do it would be the maximum tippet or tensile strength leader that you can effectively apply pressure with. Because when you have a nymph rod that's bending with that 1 weight, you can apply a good amount of pressure, but you're not going to snap 7x, if your knots and everything are good and you got good high quality leader material, without something drastic happening, like the fish flopping onto the leader, or the fish eating going their direction. So if you called 1 weight, a rod that could handle 2 pound tensile line, called the 2 weight one that could handle 3 maximum bend. I'm talking about, like, you can put as much bend into that 2 weight with your six, your, you know, 3 pound or, you know, 6X class tippet, and for, you know, the four, you could use, you know, 5 or 6 pound break strength line and fight fish that way and be able to use those, you know, jig streamers. You know, with the three, you know, 5X would be the number I would say you could go to town fighting it, you know. And not that you couldn't use heavier leader to present the flies in different situations, but you're not going to be able to put any more pressure with the rod than that number.
So, and I think what people need to understand is that full torque, and Joe is saying, like, you know, full arc, full bend, like that's where your most protection is in a rod, is when you're actually using the graphite. When you bow down to a fish, you lose that.
And to describe the actual practical application of that, if you take a 2 pound weight and tie your line to it with, you know, 6X, and you try to lift that with your nymph rod, you will be amazed how much pressure, because you're not going to do it. You won't get it off the ground, you know. In all likelihood, you'll get to the point where you're like, "Good grief, that's 2 pounds," you know, and your 6X is not going to break, and you're going to fold your nymph rod
You're
over.
be below your handle. You're gonna be, you know,
Right, so that's a good example of what actual, you know, applying, you know, even 1 pound, you can see how much you're actually, you know, into with a 1 pound weight, and it'll give you a good idea of, you know, why you infrequently break, you know, 6 or 7X unless something weird happens or you're not stuck.
And I think that idea of giving a tensile strength is incredibly user friendly, because like right now, even with fly lines, they have like grains and stuff like that. Like fly lines, you could have a true line weight, you could have a half step, you can have a full step, and people don't know what the hell they're buying. I feel like that breaks it down pretty clear cut for people. I think that's a good way to do it. What other rods might you be adding to the series? I know you mentioned the 6 weight and the 4 weight. Are there any other rods you see in the future that you're working on that you can disclose with us, or?
I've got a note right here next to my desk for a 10 foot 4 inch small fly big fish, 1 weight tip power, 3 weight backbone rod. And so that's the sort of stuff that is on my mind. I do think that there is room for a rod that's sub one with following what I'm calling a one, because like I said, it's, you know, there's not really an industry standard of what a 1 weight nymph rod power is. So, and I don't think that the casting the overhead AFMA standard line is a great way of differentiating the power of that rod, because, you know, it's not the main thing the rod is going to do. And we've got a whole market of people that want to do something different with that, you know, rod. And so there's just a lot of there's a need for, you know, someone to be breaking free from those constraints and making products that work well for what where they where you know the tactics are going to go.
How often are you in contact with like a lot of the comp guys? Obviously, they have a lot of knowledge with tight lining, and you know, I know a lot of them are moving to a lot of thin tippets and stuff like that. And you know, I imagine you have a lot of contacts and a lot of networking. I mean, how has that helped you out along the way, and how much is that involved with your development?
I'm very fortunate to have a group of connections that are, I don't know if I could have better connections than I have for getting the product feedback that I get. And I'm very selective about who I think gives the type of, you know, tangible feedback that you want to listen to. You know, whether it's overhead casting or, you know, with nymph equipment, you know, I ask a lot of people their opinion. I put a lot of stock in just a few, you know, so I try to I try to make the right choices of who I, really listen to, because you can't listen to everybody. It just blurs, things. You need to trust yourself, and you need to trust a core group of people to really be able to have a tight vision of what you're looking to do, with product development for new models, or for, just broad design for something standard. If you want to make the best, you need to, need to know what that target, is. And so for me, people like Devin Olsen and Lance Wilt are two of, the people that I consider my most close confidants. But there's maybe like a dozen in the nymphing realm that I pay attention to what they're doing with their leaders. Josh Miller is another one who I put a lot of stock in what he's, what those guys are doing in Pennsylvania. Though, they're really dialed anglers down there. And Alec Gerbeck, who's now he went from Umpqua to Yellow Dog, who's a good all around. He's a great like saltwater guide. He's one when I was at TNT, I put a lot of stock in what his opinions were in things. Cam Chaffee, one of my good close friends. He's one of the great nymph anglers that I, my close friends who I put a lot of stock in what he would think about things there. So there's, I'm not going to name everybody, but there's,
Quite
it's
it.
not a big group, but there's, it's not tiny either.
Right on. Let's talk a little bit material wise, and not specific what the materials may be, but with these Diamondback rods, what's new? Like new components, guide, etc. What's new about these rods compared to some of the other rods that you've designed in the past?
Having the pair of single foot stripping guides is unique to these rods from anything else I've done, anything else I've seen in the industry. I've seen everything else have one, single stripping guide. But when you have a nymph rod, especially a lighter one, like a 1 or 2 weight, and you're fighting a big fish and you've got the rod folded over, whatever guides are closest to the apex of the bend of the rod are going to have the steepest angle of the where the line goes around the guide. And when you're really laying into a fish, especially on those 1 and 2 weights, but even on a bigger one too, if you're using the backbone of the rod on a big fish, the apex of your bend is going to be where the second stripping guide is. And they're single feet, they're lightweight, but they have the ceramic insert. So when you have that really light, fine leader, and you're under heavy pressure, and you've got, a big brown that's, taking little bits of line under heavy pressure as you're trying to wear that fish out. If you go from a single stripping guide to a single foot metal guide, no matter what the material is, nickel, titanium, or metal, the flexible guides aren't really any more smooth, and you've got a high friction point. The highest friction point of anything, you're going to have in a day of fishing is going to be when you're fighting your biggest fish and the line is hitting that first single foot guide at a really steep angle under high pressure. So that is, and also when you're shooting, a micro leader with a couple bead flies, and you've got a rig that you can potentially throw a ways, where your line goes through that first ceramic insert and then rattles around off of the smaller metal higher friction guide is easily the highest friction point that's slowing down your ability for the line to really shoot. And having the second, even though it's a smaller ceramic insert guide going into those single foot guides, makes a really big difference if you really slow down. If you took a high quality camera and micro speed looked at what your line looks like as you release your line and it comes up and hits those first couple guides, you would see a lot of, friction happening, and seeing the line piling up behind that first single foot guide, because there's a lot more resistance there than behind it. And it's the biggest difference from one guy to the next of less resistance to more resistance. So it's just inviting, this pile up area for you to lose your momentum of your cast there. And I don't think any other company has done that by, doing the two ceramic insert guides, and doing the single foot really lightweight ones that I'm using allows it to not, really mess up the weight or, the balance of the rod at all.
Very good. Matt had a question for you, and he's not able to be on right now, but, and I don't really know the answer to this other than preference, but as far as cork grips on rod, and I noticed right away, I fished two of the Diamondbacks, and I noticed that I really like the grips on them. I don't know if less material means better feel or whatnot, but are there any advantages to style of cork grips? So like half wells, full wells, that sort of thing, design with a rod?
It's a really difficult question because it is a subjective question. And from angler to angler, depending on either the shape of your hand or just the personal preference of what people like, the feeling. I know from, working at TNT, there were a lot of customers who wanted to customize their stuff. And there are just as many, it's there's just as many people who want a grip that's thinner as people that want a grip that's thicker. It's the hardest thing to choose a grip that will, no matter what you do, at least 30% of the market is going to feel it and be like, this is not right for me. So it's I'm glad to hear, that you like the shape of these. I try to use kind of more standard shapes because I, the more out there you get with the grips, the further you get from the core of what people are looking for. And so I know that the standard grip isn't going to be perfect for everybody, but I also know if I did, a short snub-nosed grip, that also isn't going to be perfect for, everybody. And so tough question. It's one of those things that the more people you talk to, the more questions you ask about what someone's preference is, the more someone in my position ends up being like, well, good grief, like there's no consensus here. There's, both directions.
All right. Awesome. So I don't know. I seem to think like, as a guide, I tend to see more breakage with Euro rods, right? They're longer on average. What's the policy with Diamondback?
So Diamondback has standard fittings on all of the sizing sections, so the rods do not need to be shipped back to be measured. There is a $50 per section replacement charge and a $15 shipping fee. So if you break your tip on a rod, that's $65. You send in a picture of the broken section of the rod, and then, I process the repair. So if there's two sections of the rod broken, it would be $100 for two $50 sections, and then the $15 shipping fee. The way these are designed, I don't expect to see many rogue breaks. If the you're perfectly designed nymph rod, people are still gonna break them. People are gonna whack them off of tree branches. Fish are gonna come off. It's just horrible things happen to rods that are that long and that thin. So, the one thing I noticed as the years went by between this is the fourth series of nymph rods that I've designed. I did one at Cortland, I did two at TNT. This is, I did the one here, and the industry has gotten better at making rods that are more durable across, across the board because the fabric area weights of the materials have gotten thinner, which allows more revolutions of material around the mandrel. and that creates a part that has more consistent wall thickness and strength across the part. So across the industry, as these material providers have squeezed down their materials into finer, thinner fabric area weights, which is less grams per square meter of carbon, just it's thinner is the practical purpose is you get more, you get the same wall thickness from more revolutions of it, and that creates stronger parts. And then there's also aspects of the reinforcement fibers, the angles that they're at, the resins that are used. There's a lot of things that go into what contributes to the strength of the part. The consistency of the manufacturing process is not the least of them. So there's a lot that goes into that, but that's what the warranty process is for these rods.
And what's typical turnaround ballpark, right?
It's good because without having to have the rods come back, and with me being here in southern Vermont where the parts are, the turnaround can be is, a few days. A week is probably a very realistic turnaround time between breaking one and getting a replacement section for it.
Which is phenomenal. I mean, I've, and, guiding, I see a lot of rod breakage, and it's tough because some of these top end rods that you want to put in people's hands, once they break, you're out of the game for 2 or 3 months. During your design process, did you see that? And push towards being able to get rods back to people super quick, because I feel like in the industry, like there's some damn good rods out there, and the industry standard was always, I feel like, 2 months, and I could be off with that, but like, was that something that was on your radar? Like, we have to be able to get these rods back to people quicker.
Well, I completely rewrote the warranty policy for the Diamondback brand because having been in customer service for multiple fly brands, you see the situations that are uncomfortable for the company, uncomfortable for the customer, and I tried to come up with a policy and a way of doing it that was going to make it easy for the customer. For me, shipping the rod sections back, it was always like a really big pain part of the process. Finding a tube for it, getting to the mill, for it. The time, the turnaround, right now I think 2 months would be really good, for a lot of the rods that people might be breaking right now, from what I'm hearing. I'm not gonna say any name or spit out any numbers, but it's not good, the things that I'm hearing about the time frames for things. So that's super frustrating if you've got one really, top end rod that you want to, be using 3 times a week, or at this time of year you want to be using it nearly every day. And once it might break for a reason that's, not the rod's fault, not your fault, something, just rogue might happen, like happens with, when you're, on the water for many, many days doing this with these long, fine rods. And, the more fish you're catching, the more stuff comes flying back at you, and, rod tips come, whipping around. So yeah, it's a warranty process has a lot to do, with how someone's able to effectively, feel good about using a rod and reaching for that rod confidently, when you're, walking off onto a trip.
For sure, man. For some people, these rods, quite a bit of money, good chunk of change. They're worth every bit, but to break a rod and have the heartbreak of knowing that shit, I'm not gonna have this rod for the whole spring, is the rude awakening. It's like you almost back up, and some companies, have gotten it and done it. So kudos to you for the foresight on that with Diamondback. That's huge. I can't tell you enough how huge that is. So I had a chance to fish the 10-10-2 weight and the 10-10-3 weight, and the 10-10-3 weight is an absolute beast, I feel like. And I was super impressed with the rod on recovery, and we had a question from somebody in our audience about recovery, but for long lining styles that we use on the Farmington, for like 35-foot cast with full mono rigs fishing bugs and stuff like that, I found the rod extremely accurate, very powerful, but yet I could subdue larger fish on light tippet, and at the price point of the rod, there's nothing else on the market that can do what it does. So I was really impressed with the three weight. I know you said you had other favorites outside of the three weight, but with
that's my least favorite of the, oh, you of said, like the six rods I've designed in that series.
I know, but for the
but stuff, but I like it, and I wouldn't have gone to market with it if I didn't, you know, think that it was what I wanted it to be. I just have a very high standard for all of them, and the light end ones really came in good, and the four way I'm doing is really coming in good, and that's why I say that.
And I think it's important, you need to understand, and this is where you're going to want to listen to your shop guys, like, you know, like for instance a 10-10-2 weight, like if I'm fishing, so I fish, I'll do a mono rig of 12 pound tapered out to specifics, and then I'll use a like a micro leader system, maybe 5 pound, a lot lighter, right? And for the light line system, that 10-10-2 weight is phenomenal. But if you try to use the rod outside of what it was meant for, no matter what rod you're using, it's not going to perform that way. So I think it's important to listen to shop guys, you know, do your research on the rods and what they're going to for you, but that 10-10-2 weight with the light line system, you know, fishing medium to close, just phenomenal. Very, very good rod. So I'm you know, I'm excited to be able to get some of these other in my hands. But just my initial feedback, and limited obviously, but just super impressed with what you've done. And there was a lot of people, you know, in my neck of the woods that knew you were going to do a good job with these rods. And I kind of figured you would, just historically of what you'd done. But I don't say anything get the actual rod in my hand, you know, and it was just, it doesn't take long to figure out that the design with these rods is just exceptional. So I'm going to move on to our audience here and see if they have any questions, Joe. And we might be able to feed him. If you got a bounce, dude, it's 9:56. I know we got a little bit of a late start. So if you got a bounce, just say so. No big deal.
I see there's a question on the screen about the recovery rate.
Yes. Thank you. That was the first one I wanted to hit. That's Ben Canino. And he just wanted you to talk just a little bit about recovery. I think how important it is in your own imping, and yeah, go for it. I'm scrolling through here to see if there's more questions. So.
Well, knowing what the recovery of the rod needs to feel like, a lot of it comes from spending a lot of time on the water and just having a good idea of what I want the rods to do, you know, because I just have tight line nymphed a lot, you know, for a lot of years, and, you know, designing multiple series of these rods also contributes to developing a strategy that I can build upon, you know, and in my opinion, each of the last things I've done has been a significant, you know, step forward in ideas and design, you know, concepts, but also building off of every single one. You know, the original Cortland one was a great fast recovery rod. They were made from high modulus carbon that broke all the time. They were, you know, that was an aspect of the design at that time that I wasn't prepared to manipulate effectively to make a better product. And, you know, as I designed the first ones at TNT, I did a little bit better, you know, as I was, you know, getting the hands-on ability to do it myself. But those were also a rod that had a pretty high break rate, you know, even though they were very, you know, sensitive rod, and they were designed to feel how I wanted. And, you know, when I did the rod at TNT, I thought that TNT would sell like 50 of them, you know, because TNT was just such a boutique, you know, rod company with such low volume turnover at the time that I started doing that. You know, when I redesigned them, I took a lot of time looking at the materials and, you know, doing a lot of break tests and understanding what material options were available in the industry. To, you know, the Contact 2 is way different in design than the Contact 1 in terms of the complexity of my background understanding of how I was doing it. Even though the action and the feel of the Contact 2 doesn't blow the Contact 1 rods out of the water, the strength and durability and overall design that went into them, that does. You know, and so with the rods that I'm having designed now, all of that experience, and every time I do it, I'm like, yeah, if I did it again, here's, you know, how I would do it a little bit differently. Now I have access to a larger material library, which allows me to use a wider range of fabric area weights in lower and intermediate weights. That is the difference between what I'm doing now and what I did at TNT. And I'm not going to delve into any more of the specifics of those things, but material library and differences in that is what I would say has a lot to do with me having more ability. Also, tooling, the number of mandrel tapers, you know, that are available. They're very fine. The nymph rods are very long, flat, you know, there's not much expansion, and just little changes for a really long, you know, part for the four long four piece parts, you know, that's a fine, you know, thing where the more of the fine tapers you can have to do exactly what you want to do, the more ability you will have to create exactly what you know, envision for, you know, for me, the way that I do it. As far as the recovery goes, though, the taper of the rod, the wall thickness of the rod, the materials of the rod, in order for a rod to recover, it needs to, you know, flex first. And so, you know, how the action and how the expansion of the lower part of the rod stabilizes and forces the higher part of the rod to stop moving. And having an action that's in harmony, where there's no kind of breaks in the way the energy transmits, and, you know, is refined as the diameter gets smaller and the wall thicknesses change going towards the tip of the rod. There's a lot that, you know, everything that goes into it contributes to the recovery of the rod, you know, feeling right for what the application is. So it's a hard to, you know, have like a straightforward answer to that question, but everything about it results in how it feels and what it does when you go to fish with it. And, you know, when I'm making changes to rods, I'm making changes to the rods while I'm literally fishing with them. The changes that I make to a rod design, you know, I'll be standing out there in the rain, you know, making the rod tip recover. And, you know, when I decide what it is, that's, you know, what it, you know, I'll it'll be somewhere in the middle of the day that I'll say, I'm going to expand the expansion rate of the butt mid of this rod by, instead of 0.004 thousandths of expansion per inch of linear change, it's going to be 0.0042. And then it's going to be 5 mils bigger at the, female barrel, or it's going to be, 3 mils smaller at the male end and 2 mils bigger at the female end, because there's an extra 5 mils of expansion across the part that's got a steeper, expansion rate. That's the sort of, change that might make a rod stiffer down at the bottom. So that's the sort of thing that, it's, for me, the actual fishing feel translates into the actual engineering change that I, can envision what change is going to happen when I use a material that's got a higher tensile rate, that's stiffer, or I make the wall thickness a little bit thicker and increase the pattern of the material. There's a lot of different ways of changing the action. And in the industry, a lot of people use these deflection boards. You might see ads where there's like a bunch of like lines where someone's like hanging like a weight off of like their rod tip,
Yeah.
and it doesn't tell you what something feels like.
When you're out.
You can replicate the bend of something with, you can have something that's made out of carbon that recovers quickly, and you can take a thick-walled blank made out of fiberglass and build the walls up so you create the exact same bend when you hang the weight off of it. But there's two things that feel completely differently. And being able to design not just to see what the bend looks like, but to see what the rod feels like when it bends and unbends, that's the probably major difference between the way that I design and the way that a lot of other things in the industry are happening.
Right on. Can you talk about the reel that you're working on? Is that all right?
Yeah, let me. I think I have one right
So I'll
here.
for that. Obviously, a lot of the companies in the industry, they make some really nice reels and work on the European, mono jig reel system, but a lot of them might fall short. So do that full mono systems, I'm sure, fishing, and nymphing, and the mono will jump the spool on you, some with more reels more than others, and that's just one aspect of a rod with like a full cage spool. But I mean, there's some really good reels on the market that just, I don't know, the companies just haven't really full-fledged looked into it. So, Joe, what do you got for us, man?
So I am very soon going to be coming to market with two reels that, well, it's one reel in two sizes that I have been working on for a long time. And because the visual parts of the reel, like this is one that looks nothing like what the final reel is going to look like, except for a lot of the engineering aspects. That was the reason why I haven't been showing a lot of this to anyone besides in person, because there was some very unique aspects of the reel. Like, if you look at the silhouette of the reel foot, it's a normal length reel foot, but the connection of the spool or the frame to the reel foot is offset by more than a half an inch. And it's about the same offset that your down locking reel seat is different than your up locking reel seat. I'm sorry, I've got a cap that I'm letting in and out of my room here. So that there's a bunch of things that are different about this reel, and they're all based on things that I experience when I'm fishing with a nymphing reel and trying to, just when I've got a gripe about where the line went or how it chafed the line or how it was hard to recover the line. So quickly, I'll hit on a couple things here. So you've got a reel that has the offset reel foot. It has an enclosed frame that's highly milled out and rounded out along all of the edges of where the line gets pulled off. And so I took the reel and I took, when you fish, I pulled line off from a bunch of different ways to try to think when I'm just fishing and I'm not looking at the reel, where does the line actually come off? And then looking at those areas, I went in and changed the machining to highly round and smooth out the whole rim of the area. So when you have a micro leader or really fine leader, not only is it not getting caught in the spool, but it's also not chafing or, going over a sharp edge when you're pulling it off the reel. And any way that you can pull the line off of this reel, it's nice and smooth against your leader. There's a 1-2 and a 3-4. They have four removable 10-gram weights on the inside. These are naked right now, so there's nothing in this 3-4 reel. This one goes from 4.9 ounces when it's empty up to 6.3 when it has the four 10-gram weights in it. And that weight range will allow the 3-4 reel to perfectly balance any of these, 10 to 11 foot nymphing rods. Some of the reels out there now are like 8, 8.5 ounces. It's more than you need. And some of the reels, are just around like 5 with no extra weight. And depending on how long your rod is, it's not versatile enough for you to really dial in the balance of it. So although it's only four 10-gram weights, I looked at what reel weight ranges balance the premium rods and, made it no more or no less. So there's that aspect of it. There are reels that have a drag that is, I've bought king salmon on these things. It's like a saltwater quality drag. It has two full revolutions of range across of moving the knob across the tension range. So, you can really, slide around the drag depending on how light you're going with the tippet. It goes down to fully, nothing. It doesn't start with any. There's settings that have, no inertia. So it's not like you can't get light enough if you want to fish like something super light for some reason. The reel handles, I've always struggled with the reel handle shapes of being able to easily find them quickly and get a hold out of them when, a lot of times you have a really, dramatic 5 seconds or something, when you hook like a good fish, it might come towards you. You've got like, 10, 6, 8, 10 feet of line suddenly that you're trying to recover. And so I wanted to have a reel that had a large enough arbor and easy enough movement where you could hit the reel and you could spin it and recover, 6, 8 feet of line in a couple seconds. So I designed a reel handle that has this big diameter. It has three little silicone O-rings that are going around it that give it like grip on the outside. And so it's easy to find it. It's easy to spin it. You can, suck up your leader easily. The reel has a great drag system. It's got the removable weights, the down locking reel foot. It's, as many aspects of what I thought would be the, what would be perfect for what a nymph reel should be is what has gone into this. It's a premium reel. They're going to be an over $500 reel, but it required with all the weird stuff that I, changed to make the reel the way it is that drove the price to the where it is. But there's going to be extra spools available for them. I think that they're, it's something I'm looking for. I'm glad I have taken the time to do as many things with these because I think it's going to be a home run product, especially having the 1-2 size. In my opinion, the market's going to get smaller and smaller over the next couple of years, and everyone's going to have a one weight. So I think that it's nice to have a reel that's a 4.5 ounce base weight that still has a drag like that you can, that has all these, other features at the same time.
Yeah. Well, just, I mean, some of the features that he just explained, how it sits on the rod, the milling of how you're pulling line off. I mean, line gets chafed all the time when we're yearing, especially guiding, because people don't know how to pull line off reels, so they pull it straight down. It's pretty brutal. The line jumping the spools. The ball, I'm not saying it is, but like we've had reels with ball bearing assists that in and suck up, Joe was saying. That's not something seen in a Euro reel. So, you know, there's a lot of breaking the mold with this reel. So I'm pretty excited just hearing you talk about it. Sounds like you're pretty excited about it too, man. And so yeah, so I'm gonna see if there's any questions here. I know we're gonna probably have to hang it up pretty quick. Joe, is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, I don't know if there's any other, you know, questions people have. I love answering people's questions about these sort of things.
Yeah. Yeah. And I apologize if I missed. Usually Matt's on here and we can catch a lot more, and I'm trying to do my best here to catch questions. Is Diamondback looking to make rods at different price points?
Yes, I have a fully USA made Diamondback rod project that's in the works. That's going to make the rods a lot more expensive. That it's not going to be, you know, I like to offer these specialty rods at a lower price point like this, just because, you know, with nymph rods, if you know, it's nice for people to be able to fill out their quiver and have, you know, a one weight and a four weight nymph rod. Because, you know, if you don't have a one weight and a four weight nymph rod, when you're fishing your smallest flies, you could be fishing them better. And when you're fishing your biggest flies, you could be fishing them better. So, you know, by having a rod that's, you know, $500 instead of $1,000, you know, you can, you know, have both. And, you know, for those days where the water is like really high, you reach for that four weight and you're in business. And, you know, now it's like August and the water's low and the flies are tiny. You know, and you'd rather have the one than the two, you know, because the stuff you're doing is such a fine, you know, application thing. So for me, I like having equipment that's like just right for what I'm trying to do. And that's why I, you know, even though there's a bunch of rods in this series, every one of them is a rod that at some point I'm babying, you know, that's going to do exactly what I want it to do before I'm done designing it and bring it to market.
Right on. Yeah, I mean, just a good example, you know, on the Farmington recently, you know, we went from the Hendricksons when they were, we had higher flows, and then it just like dropped right off. And now that 10-10-2-8 would be perfect with like a micro leader system.
And the 10-10-2-8, I think, is the best rod in the range, as far as I think that that's the best. For what people are doing today, all-purpose rod you could have. It's a strong two. You know, it's got quite a bit of backbone as far as being a two. I think the tip is, you know, the top half of that rod, I still consider it to be a two, or else I, you know, wouldn't call it a two. But that rod, and unless you're, you know, fishing the stuff that has the bigger gauge hooks, like a size, you know, 8 or 6 or bigger hook, where you're just not going to have the tip mid power to effectively set the hook when the fish you want to catch eats, that's where you don't want to use, you know, the two. When you're using the, even the bigger size bead nymphs, your hook, you know, diameters are small enough where you're going to have the power to get the hook sets you need on the fish that you want to catch. Even if they're big, you know, with those smaller hooks, you're still going to hook your, you know, big fish when it eats your, you know, small bee fly. And so, you know, that 10-10-2 will fight a big river trout. You know, that one will, you know, I don't know if you can fully max out 5X with it. You know, for the half size, it's definitely 5.5X. You know, you should be able to break 6X with it if you wanted to. I know, you know, Devin Olson sent me a picture of a big carp he caught, you know, on it on accident in a tailwater. They're, you know, all of these rods are made to be good fish fighting tools and have the wall thickness and the power down in the bottom, where when you're pushing the rod that hard, they're made for you to have, you know, something to,
don't be,
to get into when you need to.
Don't be afraid to put the screws to the fish with these rods, with the, as far as the bend is concerned. I mean, as a guide, I do see that people with fighting fish don't utilize the full of the graphite in their hands and fighting fish. So It might be one thing to take away. That's just something that Joe's repeated on a couple times tonight, is just how surprised you can be at if you took a weight and put it to your rod and lifted it off the ground, how you'd probably be a little shocked at what it could do. I think you actually answered the other question that was out there, man. I think we're good. So thank you so much for coming on. So, excellent, excellent job with these rods. We look forward to the new rods coming out, the reel, and anything else you're working on. We'd love to have you on again, obviously, at any point. You're with, at least with our audience, you're, all the work you do is a big hit, and it's appreciated the amount of time and effort you put into your job, because it's not like that across the board. So yeah, just thanks a ton, man.
Happy to, I'm it's cool that there's a few people who are interested in hearing this, and I'm glad to share, some of the stuff that's behind everything that I do.
Awesome. All right, brother. Well, have a great night. Thanks everyone for coming on, and we'll try to get this up on the podcast for people to listen in that weren't able to tonight. So have a good night, everyone. Joe, thanks so much, man.
Thanks, Derek. Have a good night.
All right. Good night.